Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 24th day of November.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today, a special edition of our program taken from the Farm Assets Conference. Our corn panel included Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois, Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services from Webster City, Iowa, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
We started our conversation at the Farm Assets Conference by asking Jerry Golke to give his view of the corn market.
Well, I think we're sitting in a situation where we don't have a great oversupply of corn in the world. Our demand has kept going up, and if you look at the global demand for feed grain, it's gone up, and look at it over the years, it's gone up just about every year. We've had a slowdown and then a surge higher again, and so we're at a situation, I think, that's not a crossroads but a pause in this. We also have a lot more competition out there, a lot more providers of corn, which means if you had just one, the price would be determined mainly with the United States, whereas now we've got the Ukraine and Argentina is expanding and Russia is in the market somewhat, and you've got Brazil. So any problem in any one of them, I guess you could say we've increased the problem percentage of probability maybe by four since we've added these extra producers who came about at $7 corn. And at $7 corn, it was kind of like $145 barrel oil. Most of the people in the world said, why should I import $7 corn from Jerry, pay $3.50 a bushel to get it here? I can grow it myself. And so we got, anybody can grow $7 corn successfully. So we brought in some new competition at a time when we didn't have the grain to export. So our exports fell in half, and Ukraine and other countries stepped in to provide that grain to the rest of the world so we didn't lose or destroy demand permanently. And I think that's where we're at now. It's just a matter of, will this weather in El Nino cause a problem somewhere else? Maybe in Iowa or in Argentina or somewhere that we could get a shortfall of a half a billion or a billion bushels of corn, less than what we expect right now. And I think that kicks our can down the road of we're looking at trying to reduce the size of production somehow. And that's where I think we're at right now. And we've been here before in 2008. It took about 18 months to get us out of this problem and caused by different circumstances, but it was a drought then that did that. And if we don't have a crop problem somewhere, then we probably haven't seen the lows in grain yet. We have to get to a point eventually where somebody goes out of business and leaves land idle. And that does happen in a world that has oversupply. If that evolves in that large oversupply and a cheap price, then somebody will not plant. And I don't think that's going to be Iowa or Illinois or somewhere. It'll be the fringe states. So a lot at stake here in the next 6 months, really.
Sue Martin, he said that we need to have a problem in Iowa. That was nice of him, I think. So can you take me back to the fall? Because the one thing that we couldn't get a handle on, and I think it was because, and maybe it just seemed like it was late, but we weren't simply getting a lot of information from Iowa about the harvest and how good the yields really were. So is that because it was just really good and you guys all decided to be quiet about it, or what happened?
Well, I think that they were so busy harvesting it, they didn't have time to really talk about it.
They're on the phone trying to get semis, apparently.
That might be. The state of Iowa's yields were fabulous. As a whole, we had some areas that weren't maybe quite as good to the south where it was too wet, but basically the state and the USDA indicated that by raising the corn yield to 189 bushel per acre, a new all-time record in this November report. And I think that when you look at the corn market, We have a market here that is, you know, the cure for cheap prices is cheap prices. And if you take the low of 2008, I think we were around 36.5 or 7%, something like that, of the all-time high at that time. Now you take last year's low of 318 and a quarter, and that low is 37.2% or something a little over 37%. So we're the second lowest since 1970. And that to me probably says we've got a low in here. But this year you have an inside range year. And we've had many reasons to put that market down, and we've not been able to do it. So we're an inside range year speaks to me like a year of indecision. We're waiting for something to nudge us. I don't see it just right away, but I do think that this next year we will see a little bit of a different kind of a year than this last year. This last year, we looked for an EKG blip in the marketplace that would, all likelihood, put a high in July, and we got that. But this next year, we see a type of a year where we stair-step or we evolve into a high. So it's one that's a work in progress, not one that's here and gone tomorrow. But it's going to take a little time to get that going because we still have plentiful supplies around. And we're not in the time of year for a weather market scare, unless maybe like Jerry says, somewhere else. And we look at growing livestock here. Demand, feed usage in the U.S. is going to increase nicely this next year. That's a blessing. And I think the one downside is that we have an awful lot of corn in the Western Corn Belt that is basically unsold. And elevators are full. There's piles at ethanol plants, and I know there are several large elevator groups in Iowa that actually have very large piles still sitting from last year's crop, unsold. And so, you know, we've got to get past that, which that speaks to me as you've got a market that's just going to grind its way for a while. I don't see us taking off and rallying very far, very fast, but I do think as we get more into 2016, we're going to have some rallies in this market. And if it's weather related, maybe the market just needs a nudge to go after the huge gaps that are sitting overhead that could take us up towards 630, from $6.32 to $7 for $5.48 to $6.84, something like that.
Cool.
It's going to take time.
It takes time. Okay. So I was thinking about this. I need you to raise your hands, but not right now. How many of you raise your hands if you live within 60 miles of the hotel? How many of you? Okay. Yeah, the bulk of you. I kind of thought that was the case. I was trying to get an idea where everybody was kind of from. How many of you are in within 40 miles of Lafayette, Indiana? Anybody?
What was that question?
Lafayette, Indiana. Lafayette, Indiana. Okay, just a couple. All right. So. I'm trying to get this set up for you just a little bit. So we know that there are places, and Lafayette's one of those. Watsika, of course, area is one of those, and going east that are the have-nots. Mm-hmm. Risk management throughout the spring, the summer, they were looking there saying, hey, wait a second. This thing is, and like most everybody else, saying there's no way. There's no way we can have this crop. However, the basis has been doing the work for you now.
Certainly has.
So tell me a little bit about the strategy that you have to evolve to make that work in those areas.
The strategy. You've
got to pull the mic in front of you. Just pick up the whole thing. No, yeah, there
okay.
You go.
The strategy that we've really been incorporating is working the basis because the futures market has been disengaged for an extended period of time. We're not seeing the best basis levels ever, but at times, even through the course of a day, we will see a commercial spot go 50 or 60 over to try to attract some short ship grain. Going forward, I'd like to build a little bit on what Mike said in his comments about the corn maybe futures market being the most dysfunctional that we've seen for a while. And I've got some cautious optimism that that problem might start to cure itself as we go into the December delivery process next week, because there is a lot of corn that's not been priced in the West, and they're going to look at that board price with a 40 under corn basis or a 30 under corn basis and say, that looks pretty attractive. Maybe we need to work at that direction. And then you've got some other people in the Eastern Corn Belt that look at that board price and say, that's pretty cheap by comparison to what I'm paying to get it hauled here. Maybe I will take some delivery of that stuff. So as we go through the delivery process for the December corn and maybe even the March down the road, it's possible that those markets might become more realistic and basically do what they're supposed to do and alleviate some of the stress. The basis levels are obviously key. Cash is king in the Eastern Corn Belt for sure. But I think realistically, that should become a little bit more normalized after the first quarter of next year. Obviously, it could reassert itself before next year's harvest. But realistically, I'm cautiously optimistic that the futures market would engage a little bit stronger. That would allow the December or the March futures to get some of those more attractive sell levels, hopefully even drag the December next year's contract up into some better selling territory, and all of a sudden the market's become a little bit more buoyant and maybe a little bit more useful to us.
Pete, what do producers do if they need to make a sale between now and the end of the year, besides just make the sale?
I would be looking at, if I need to make the sale, I would be replacing it at the same time with bull call spreads and maybe sell a put against it. If you look back at the last 10 weeks, we went to 357 front month back about 10 weeks ago, but we immediately went almost up to four again, and then we've gradually went down sideways to, what did we hit this week, 64 again. I see us somewhere going sideways to a little lower, but I think we should be near that bottom. So I would be, if I need to sell it and put on a bull call spread, buy something right at the market call-wise, sell something further out, and then sell an out-of-the-money put to help take care of that. But I wouldn't just get out and be done, because I do think we can turn it around. I don't think we'll go a dollar real quick, but I think we could go 30, 40 cents. And 30, 40 cents, if we look at flat price basis, I had guys that in the last week to 2 weeks got 25 to 28 over if they had 30,000 bushel. 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, that was a 410 cash bid. Today, that's about a 398 to $4 cash bid. So the flat price is still lower. The basis is doing all the work. The board isn't. But I do expect that to turn around in the next month anyway and start going the other way, sideways to higher instead of sideways to lower. We still have a big carryout of almost $1.8 billion. That's a little higher than last year. It's, I think you have to go back to 2004, 5, and 6. We had a little higher than that. So we have lots of grain available. If you're from Illinois and in this area, you're thinking, where's it at? I don't see piles. Well, last year, Rundus, when we averaged 240 around here, it's in the Western Corn Belt where they have piles. We don't see it around here. But we still have that basis allowing us for some good pricing if we stay in it with buying a bull call spread.
You know, the season's average cash price, Jerry, and does anybody have a question? Just raise your hands when you do, because I'll let you ask them. Season's average cash price this year, this last November estimate, was only 5 cents less than it was for last year for the season. But boy, corn price feels like it's a lot lower to me, and that it's just been under pressure. What are the factors you think that have pushed it that way? And I'm wondering in particular about the very low price of crude oil, the impact it has on the marketplace. And we do talk about the U.S. dollar some as well.
Yeah, I think there was a big expectation this year that we'd get a rally like we did last year.
Can you pull the mic just a little closer to you?
I think there was anticipation this year we'd get a rally like we did last year. Last year we bottomed on October 1st, and you couldn't get anybody out there to believe that farmers weren't going to sell. We're going to have all these piles of corn and grain and beans. We got record yields. It didn't happen. Our grain bins were empty. We held the grain. Financially, we were able to do that. This year, it was pretty easy, and I listened to the radio and television analysts. They were all saying pretty much the same thing. Well, just hold on. There's going to be, we'll get the seasonal rally. It didn't happen. It went the other direction. So we're worse off than what we were in October, basically. So I think that market psychology has got some people, you know, we've run out of time. a little bit depressed, and the buyers on the side of it are saying, you guys got to sell sometime. We have an office at the Board of Trade, and I can go walk amongst traders who have never been in a combine or raised a kernel of corn, and they'll say, well, you guys can't hold forever. You're going to come to market someday. You're going to sell that grain, and until you do, we're not interested because you could wake up one morning and sell a bunch of grain and dump it on our heads. So they're expecting us to move it. The next excuse would be January 1st, so because they think we don't know enough about selling grain today and taking the money later. They think we wait until January 1st for tax purposes and dump it. But I think that's part of the problem, and we're hearing these piles this year in the Western Corn Belt. And I think that makes it sound lower, because last year we were higher. We were on our, you know, we'd made our higher rate. We drew, 70 cents, I think, from the lows. So that's the market psychology. Just doesn't make you feel good, you know, about it.
Yeah, makes you feel pretty bad about it, in fact.
But the guys in the Western Corn Belt are multiplying, you know, their yield maybe 10% more. And so if you want to do a mind game, you can say, well, I'm really getting 10% more of the 350, so I'm really getting 385 for it. So some of them are starting to move grain because the bushels times price gives you that gross amount that really isn't too bad for some of those. The guys in the Eastern Corn Belt, you can't get the basis high enough probably to make them hold if they lost 35% of their crop, you know.
So the question really becomes, will the folks in Iowa go ahead and sell? They like to store corn in Iowa. Will they sell? Because if the market's depending on Iowa to sell, which sounds like what you're telling me, that doesn't seem like it fits into their normal mode of operation to me very well.
We're seeing a little bit of selling at this time. It's kind of a little post-harvest rally in basis, maybe, to where it's narrowed a little bit. We're recommending to producers in the Western Corn Belt, we feel we have a year coming here that's a year of two markets. The Western Corn Belt is going to see, and we believe they won't see through the whole next crop year, we believe that their basis is going to remain old-fashioned, where we have carrying charge markets. We won't see the inversion in the markets. We've been spoiled. We've seen inverted markets, not this year, but the previous 2 years, and 1 year on corn, then the next year on beans. We're telling producers in the Western Corn Belt, sell your grain, and not because we're brokers, we're telling them, buy that grain back on the board, give it time. We're suggesting to them, if you buy the futures, go out to September. Because in years that end in a six, actually you talk about the market right now, and we're doing everything we have done for the last 10 years that have ended in a six, preceded by a year of a five, we have seen a market that has tended to put its harvest lows in for corn in November, December, most of the time November, December, or 1 year it was January of the year of a six, and 1 year it was in April. But the nice thing was, all of them seen higher highs in the year of a six. They had a nice progressive rally. They tended to be never in June, July, August, or September. And so to get that whole move, we think you go out to September, if you're on the futures, because for one thing, let's say it peaks in July or it peaks in August, you're going to still benefit that rally because of the carrying charge market. Now, in the Eastern Corn Belt, you've got the basis working for you, so therefore, you don't maybe have to push the grain to market because you're going to have that basis, and it will always be trying to tug on you to get you to sell because you're tighter supplied. If the basis gets too high, southeast is going to bring corn in from Argentina and Brazil. The one thing I will say is years also in when you've had a 20% or higher decline from a June-July high to an August through January low, and already we're at 20.8% of a decline, you tend to see from that low, a rally. And if you look at May futures, the rally tends more times than not to come in April or May. A few times it comes in March, never in February. And the other thing that I noticed was is that there were a few times you would see the subsequent low. Maybe it would take out the low of the preceding August to January low, but more times than not, I would say the larger percentage of time, that low is not exceeded. And with this being an inside range year, I just find that so interesting, talking about yields going up and the market just can't seem to really break. However, I don't see anything happening very special to prices for a while. I think this market's going to wallow, and I think it's going to wallow longer than you'd like.
If we're in a more normal market, meaning we have carrying charge and we're there, they've all built storage. They've all put corn in storage. They all have no inclination to move it. Are they doing the right thing with their storage? In, not in this given year, but in historical perspective.
Historically, it's been our observation that the producer usually used the bins more for a price discovery tool than a real marketing tool. The market right now is really pulling some inventory forward and expressing itself in spreads. The distance between the December contract and the March contract, the difference between December and May, or Dece, July, March, May, all those relationships have a price. And what the market is telling the producers right now in the futures market is to try to pull that inventory forward. Not real aggressively, but the D-Smart spread has come into, I believe, 5 cents on occasion. A normal carrying charge market is going to reward you by selling deferred futures, probably in the neighborhood of 3 cents a month, pay you that just to, for your storage costs. If you're using it for a flat price vehicle, your relationships are not being discovered properly, and you're cautiously hoping for higher prices. One of the things that we were thinking about in our office and why we started to latch onto the idea of the December futures delivery was the farmers just got done with harvest. You just put the crop in the bin and closed the door, cleaned your equipment, put it away, and you go to the house. What is the incentive for you to walk out next week, open that bin door, fire up the auger, spring over the semi, and start unloading it again? There's not much incentive that wasn't there during harvest. So what is it going to take to open that bin door again? It's probably going to take a futures rally. It's going to have to show you another incentive that it's not 360, 370, it's closer to 385 or 390, and then your local cash bid is probably going to slip out and deteriorate. How fast that happens is going to be your marker of how healthy your local corn market is. So I'm laying out the strategy right now for a lot of the guys with really nice cash bids to maybe secure some of that basis. Because if the futures market does rally 15 or 20 cents or more, that basis could slip out penny for penny. If you lock it in and you get that futures rally, you're going to be able to sell into a much more attractive cash market than you're looking at right here today.
Okay, let me make sure that I've got this right. So right now the marketplace is saying, yeah, don't store it, go ahead, sell it, send it to me.
Right.
Right? And they're saying, no way, that's not a high enough price. That's the futures market.
Correct.
But basis is doing a lot of work in trying to get you to do that, trying to open your bin doors. I actually saw somebody as I was coming from Muhammad here today who actually was unloading corn out of a bin. Surprised the devil out of me. Did anybody else see that on the highway, on the interstate on the way up? Yeah, was right off of the interstate outside of Mansfield or someplace. I don't remember where it was. But they were certainly unloading the bin. But that's... the futures market isn't telling them to do that.
Correct.
The basis is telling them to do that.
Yeah, your futures market is giving you a disincentive to store because the spreads are tightening up. The nearby contracts are gaining on the deferreds, so they're not giving you that attractive storage rate. It's less. It's present, but it's less. It's kind of like 1% interest rates at the bank on your savings account versus a 4%. Right now, we're getting a half to a 1% return when we really would like to see more.
Okay, I need your help. Who's got a question? Yes.
What do you expect the acres to be next spring?
What do you expect acreage to be for next spring? You want to take a shot at that one?
Well, you saw the slides up here where you can make more with corn. Mm-hmm. I keep saying here and where they're going to plant more beans and less corn. Yeah. I don't believe it. Farmers like to plant corn. On the other basis of just back here, we're buying 420 corn calls for July for 12 cents. You can do that. We did it today if you sell cash. And if you want to sell a put or sell a further out call, but it's a good way to get that 25 to 28 cents basis that you can get around Decatur. Around here, I think it's 10 to 12 cents. And the best market around here has been the train going east to the chicken factories, I think.
Well, another thing you've got to think of is that we have an early Easter coming, and early Easters usually indicate early springs. And then you look at the El Nino, and there's several weather services out there besides the Farmer's Almanac calling for a very mild spring, warm and mild, and a hot, dry summer. If you go into spring and you have an early spring and it's mild and dry, and farmers got a lot of work done this fall. I mean, out our way, everybody's got stuff done and a lot of anhydrous put on. We're going to go into spring, and that planting season's going to take off with a roll. Farmers out our way, I think, are going to plant more corn because they're remembering those wonderful yields they got, and they were phenomenal. I think they're going to plant corn. And in the meantime, if you're on marginal ground, you might think twice about planting corn because of the expense. But I think prices are going to look at that easy getting into the hard field work and getting it done, and farmers get in there. I think what's going to happen is the price will break into that. And then we'll go from there once that crop's planted, and then we'll start to really think about, okay, farmers are going to start selling. That takes you into June. We might see a down market into June.
Just a quick comment. You know, for 2 years I heard that farmers love to plant corn, and that's a typical example of the guys at the Board of Trade that I know that don't farm. They'll say, well, once your rear end is sitting in that tractor seat and it's not raining, you're going to continue to plant corn until hell freezes over. Farmers love to plant corn. We've changed our site. We're a lot smarter than what we were 20 years ago. It's the market is telling us what to plant. We planted less corn. The weather didn't stop me from planting corn, but I had my plans made up ahead of time. A lot of our clients did as well. They stopped because it was uneconomically feasible to continue to plant more of the same thing because the market was telling us, don't do it, we don't want it.
Right, but this year the market is telling you to plant corn.
Yeah, by virtue, unless we all go out there and reduce our expenses by $80 to $100 an acre, then what's going to lower our cost of production, we're going to go right back at it again. We'll plant every acre if we do that.
But don't you think those on marginal ground, that those high price, $7 corn, dragged a lot of acres into production that shouldn't have been there?
I think that's probably the key point when you talk about the asset allocation and the revenue potential. I think a lot of guys did not capitalize as well as they could have in the past 2-3 years of really good prices. If you did not capitalize on that, your financial situation is deteriorating quickly, and your capitalization process is going to be challenged at the bank. And so realistically, when you look at what it takes for the input costs for corn and beans side by side, and the input costs have just barely started to eke lower, the cost of putting out a corn crop is significantly higher than it is for beans. So although a lot of the ground is going to stay 50-50 around here, when you get into the skirted areas, you're probably going to see a heavier lean towards those beans because it really doesn't take much money to put them out, and the revenue per acre is pretty competitive.
Will we lose any acres in the coming year?
Yes. In years of economic strife, globally, we probably will. We need to do that. He asked whether we'll lose any acres. I think in years past we've done that. I doubt you're going to see that in the heart of we've heard here that the heart of the growing area isn't probably going to lose much. But you need to lose some acres from our non-U.S. competitors. I just wonder what kind of strife they're in. If we're talking about it, what's going on in other countries?
I've got 1,200 acres that I farm, and some of it's not very good. But am I going to not plant that this year? Yeah, I don't think so. If I'm on a real fringe area, maybe. Well, but here through the Midwest, I don't see anybody not planting all their acres. I just don't.
that would be pretty par for the course, I think, but across the whole of the United States. And I was really talking about the U.S., whether we would lose acres or not, because we'll flex, I don't remember how many exactly, but it's a fairly large number over time. Given that, oh, you got it? You've got the numbers?
No, that's last year's.
Oh, okay. So given that, you mentioned other areas, mm-hmm. and the idea, let's see, did you say that they would or would not? We need to force them, but will they? And so my question here is, in South America, in Brazil in particular, the real is at a point, I believe, that it makes them more competitive to us. That's why they're in part able to bring grain, potentially corn even, into the southeast.
Right.
To service the poultry and the pork industry in those states. Do you think that they can be forced by the lower prices? If they can ship grain into the U.S., surely they will plant corn.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the input side of it, because we saw inputs, you know, fertilizers down in usage, even though the price is falling some. We use, a lot of farmers use what we banked. You know, when corn is $7, I just said spread it anywhere, just get rid of the money. Well, now we're using that. And I think that's, we're being more selective of where we put it on the farmland now than what we were a couple, 3 years ago. What's the other people in Eastern Europe will say and other parts of the world doing? They may plant it, but are they going to have the money? Because the reality, you got to spend, you know, it's cost them more money to buy fertilizer, would think, and seed. I don't know what kind of relationship they have, whether they trade bags of seed for bags of corn or whatever, but you would think that capital, difficulty getting capital is going to affect someone.
What's the likelihood of a 3 billion bushel carryover, is his question, and given normal growing conditions?
3 years from now.
I think realistically, you have to look at the market and see what its structural purpose is. And if you've got 3 billion bushels of carryout, two things you need to look at. One is, what's my stocks to use ratio? And that means you have to look at the demand side of the equation. So the purpose of the market is to either stimulate production or ration demand. And so what will happen is we will go in search of enough demand to take up that slack so that the carryout does not become that burdensome. Just like the USDA put out a 700 million bushel carryout for beans last January. And all of a sudden, the market said, no, that's not going to happen. And we whittled it down. I think if the USDA came out in January or February and said, oh, based on this yield, which is a record because of the genetics, and we plant 82 million acres, we're going to have a 3 billion bushel carryout. The market's going to say, no, we're not. We're going to go lower, and we're going to stimulate demand. And we're going to have increased pork production. We're going to have increased poultry production. We may get a little bit more ethanol. And if you get cheap enough, our exports would pick up. So basically, if we get a 3 billion bushel projection, prices would probably go lower and cure that situation.
Bill?
What do low prices do? They get rid of low prices by stimulating demand. China would be buying it hand over fist, I think, plus DDGs instead of slowing down.
You know, Todd?
Yep.
I think one thing we're also not mentioning here that should be mentioned is freight rates. Freight rates are low enough that it right now allows DDGs to go into Asia at the same value as corn. And so demand for DDGs should stay pretty good going into China and Asia.
Okay, so he's been reading about some problems in other parts of the world, wanting to know how that's related to El Nino and if we can solve some of the problems we have with carryover stocks here by bad weather in other places across the planet. I would say that the answer for South America is no. Does anybody disagree with that one? Right. So the big problem, Bill, I think that's...
South Africa, they say they're not going to plant.
Yes, and then so South Africa, you have to deal with corn and wheat in Australia, and Ukraine had a very tough start to their winter wheat area as well. But we're talking about different... We're not talking about corn generally in any of those areas, yeah, except for South
Ukraine's
Africa.
Ukraine's down.
One thing you talk about, too, with China, and it's not necessarily on the production side of the equation, but the market in general just dodged or digested a big bullet. When you say that they basically have 18 million metric tons more corn than previously thought, and our markets just gave a head fake to the downside and started to recover, the market in general digested a really big shot really quick without much response. So realistically, that news, as bearish as it was, the market was not really fazed by it. So I don't think they're as big a force as we previously might have thought. The other thing too is we don't know what that news and how accurate it is. It may just simply be a penciled in adjustment of an error they made a year or two ago. So I think realistically the market has done very good in light of the news that we saw last week.
We've thrown all this negative stuff at corn for now. How long? And it just won't go down very much. And I think that's a good thing for corn that tells us that it is going to turn around, and it might not go very far, but it's going to grind the other way instead of down.
Should we be using basis contracts on corn, especially if it's really good in our areas?
Most assuredly. One of the things that we've been emphasizing over the last several years is diversification of the tools you use for marketing. There are certain years where some tools are ineffective, just like right now, being long the board has been an Achilles heel for the commercial guy for an extended period of time. Buying futures is a dud. Now that you look at a positive basis and it says that's where the money is, go ahead and reward it. And then once you've done that, take advantage of that particular thing, come back and says, do I see a structural shift in the marketplace that may make another tool like a long position on the board or a vertical call spread or a short put that becomes more functional going forward? Yeah, I would say using basis contracts is a really strong consideration, if not a recommendation in our area and points east. Points west, it's not so important because if you're 30 or 40 under, it flat out doesn't matter.
I got a question for you. When I do a basis contract at 25 over, what happens if the board goes down 20 cents in the next 2 months?
You've lost.
Where am I? So I don't think doing a basis by itself is enough. I think if I do a basis, I better protect the bottom side from it going down a little ways. Because I don't know that we've seen the bottom yet. I think we ought to be close, but I don't know that we've seen it.
Yeah, you guys in the booth space, you can go ahead and close down. Please do. Don't worry about us. We'll just keep going here.
You know,
and
one
mean
thing,
that
Todd,
nicely, not in a bad way. Okay,
one,
so go
Todd,
ahead. Yeah.
One thing, everybody keeps thinking about December corn at 357. Actually, our low this year is 346 and a quarter. It was the September contract that did it in August. So the market could drift all the way down to 346. And not be doing anything out of line, but you feel like it's gone, it's making lower lows for the year, and it's not. I don't know. I just don't see this market going up. Every technical indicator that we use is negative on corn at this time. So I would have to say, at the very best, I think corn goes sideways.
Randy? There's a lot of strife around the planet, in particular in the Middle East at this point. We've had some terrorist attacks in Paris. I didn't follow to see what Putin did with Turkey after they shot down his plane. I bet he was not a happy camper after that. What happens if we get embroiled deeper into the Middle East problems?
Egg should do better than anything. I think it's food. Part of the problem with the Middle East is the demographics is such a young population of males. And you've got that in Pakistan, you've got it in India, you've got it in Iran, that whole Middle East, and even into Africa. The population, and it has been for quite a few years here, since before 2008, where the population is a young male population who wants something better than their parents had, and they're willing to fight. If they don't have food, hungry people fight. And I think food, agriculture, is the best place to be. I think it'll be agriculture that probably does better than a lot of your market sectors.
Other questions before I get to them for a final word? Okay, we're only a couple minutes behind. We'll finish up just about 8 or 10 minutes behind. That's good. We'll start with you, Pete Manhart.
I don't see us booming here right away, but I do see us, instead of continuing to just fail, gradually somewhere finding a low and then grinding upward. I don't see us going very far either direction from here, unless we have growing conditions in South America, Africa, somewhere else to get a light under the fire.
I just want to thank everybody for coming out today. Last year's conference was spectacular, and this one looks like it's going to be even better. And so we'll collect that and say thank you, and also hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
I think another thing that we didn't look at here is the in the options. The one benefit you do have when you're involved in options this year is volatility is down. And therefore, your premiums, when you're buying out in deferred contracts, your premiums of options is a little bit less than normally what you would pay.
And Jerry Gold.
I think, like Sue said, this is going to be a tale of two cities with the East and the West, and the function of the basis is to get the corn where it is to where it isn't, and that's doing the job now. But I think in a sideways market like this, you've got to be careful to, and I've been through that. In 2008, we bought the highs and sold the lows because technically the market seemed to change at the wrong time. So I think in a sideways market, you've got to grind it out. We sell calls against our inventory. If nothing else, if you think there's going to be a rally and you'd like to get $4 corn, then like was mentioned, you could sell a call for 15, 20 cents. And if nothing else, at least by May, if you do that, you have the 20 cents and it didn't go higher, and you live to market another day and buy some time in the spring, and then keep your eye on the weather. Flexibility, I think, is going to be a big deal. These are not high-priced grains. We could do something wrong and want to change our mind and want to wish we hadn't sold corn if the weather market does us a good turn, for example. But so I think that's to sell it and kiss it goodbye and lose a dollar a bushel or 50 cents a bushel. I like what Sue said about corn possibly going higher, and the timing is right. I can't believe we're going to have three good years in a row, but I didn't believe we'd have two good years in a row either, and we did. But so plenty of time to make a decision, I think, by January when the government comes out with their outlook as well.
Our thanks to these folks here, especially to the major sponsors who really made it possible to do this. I think we had a great day. At least I hope you think so, too. TIA Cref, Farm Credit, Syngenta, and Illinois Corn Growers helped out. You don't know how much they really helped out. And thank you all so much for coming. Have a very safe trip home. Thank you for listening to the radio station. Good night now.
You've been listening to excerpts from the Farm Assets Conference that took place earlier in this week. The corn panel included Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa, Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group from Chicago, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.